Well, pleased to be talking to Jerry Croxford in London, renowned dog punter, scourge of the bookies. I think you put the wind up Ben a few times as well. You're good enough just to tell us where you started, please, Jerry, and when did you first go dog racing? When did you first start betting?
I started going to the dogs with my dad, who was an avid dog man, but what a bookmaker would call, or I've been told off for saying these words before, but what we'd call a mug punt, or what I'd call a mug punt, and my dad was a typical mug punter. Used to go just bet whatever he fancied, like my dad used to bet place a lot, like he would have like 10 or 20 pound a place, or bet with the bookmakers a 20 pound win, but he was a typical mug punt, and that was my first introduction to going to ground stadiums, was with me dad. And then my mum passed away when I was 10 years old, and we didn't go for quite a while. And then we started, my dad took me over the dogs one night with a friend of mine called Gary Daniels. And from the first time that we went, we was hooked. I was interested in the gambling side. Gary went into owning dogs, and he went into that side, but we continued to go together, although our interest was slightly different. From the age of 15, I was betting with the bookies. It'd be something that would be completely taboo now, a 15-year-old kid betting with the bookmakers, but it was, at that stage, there was probably 10 or 15 of similar aged boys over the dogs that was betting with the bookies on a regular basis, that we all used to go every single meeting. But from a young age, I loved it, and I just had, at the time, it was just a knack. I had a knack of picking winners. But very boom and bust in the early days. Like, I'd be sort of up and down, like sort of getting the money, and then what a gamble on horse racing. I've seen betting shops by that stage, and what I used to win on the dogs, I'd be losing on the horses at that stage. But from a very young age, I had a great knowledge of all the dogs at Walthamstow, and then moved on to Haringey and had a great knowledge of the dogs there. And that was my early introduction to greyhound racing, really. And from the age of 15, right the way through to now, I've gambled on dog racing. A few little blips along the way when I was, my dad passed away and I was in the antique business. I took over my dad's business. But really, I've gambled for the last probably 35 years.
So when did the boom and bust turn into being a steady professional?
20 years ago. It was a really strange. It was a really strange way that I got into betting on dogs professionally. I started getting the dog videos about 20 years ago, but as I say, I was in the antique business, and this is a pretty strange story. I had a not a great car for an antique dealer. I had a Saab convertible. And this night I went to a sale room, and I bought a card table out there that sort of had like 500 or 600 quid at a profit, like quick profit. And I wanted to take this card table, get it sold the next day to pay for the rest of the stuff that I'd bought out the sale room. My hood on my car was sticking slightly, and I got a girl to come out and just move the like lever while I touched the back of the hood to get it down. While she was in the car, she's jammed it in gear and she completely wrote off my car, smashed it to smithereens. And for that reason, I got the ump and I said, I'm not doing the antiques no more. I'm just going to go into being a dog judge. It's a lot easier. I haven't got no stress. And I just packed up being an antique dealer, and I become, I won't say a professional gambler straight away, but a gambler showing a profit. It started off a gambler that was winning. Purely at Walthamstow to start off with. Later on, after Walthamstow closed, I become a lot more successful than when Walthamstow was opened. When Walthamstow was open.
So what was it that you could see that other judges couldn't see?
That's a great question, Simon. And I don't know the answer. I know it sounds really strange. I used to, it's a little bit, I don't know whether this is a good way to describe it. It's pretty much like the Matrix when Neo used to look at the other people and think, well, why can't you do what I can do? And it was, I would literally show the people, there would always be a theory behind my conclusion of a dog winner. It wouldn't just be, oh, I fancy trap three, I'm backing trap three. I would show the theory into backing trap three and what would be the reasons and what was going to happen. And to be a great judge, you've actually got to be able to know everything that's going to happen in a race, especially for the first 30 or 40 metres. The only thing that I don't know what's going to happen is how they're going to trap. I've got no... I've got, like, sort of oldest dogs a good breaker normally, but you really don't know what's going to happen as them lids open. But what I used to be able to see, what everyone else couldn't see, I don't know. But there was a big difference what anyone else was seeing. Other people would find, like, a good bet at 2-1, 9-4, oh, this is a good bet tonight. But I'd be finding something at 8-1 that I was going to get my money out of. And obviously the rewards are a lot bigger when you're backing dogs at that prices. So.
So how much work would you have put in before you come up with a bet?
It always was a lot of studying. Once upon a time, there would literally be 20 videos over the floor with all dates on the videos, and I'd be getting out one video and putting in another video and then another video and then another video and then looking at this. Yeah, it was a lot of work. Then that went on to CDs. And then there would literally be CD strewn all over the floor. And then it's gone into a completely different system to what I've got now, which literally is at the click of a mouse on my computer. But yeah, it would be, I'd probably have to do 3 hours of studying for a dog meeting, which is a lot of studying. It'd be a lot of in-depth. It wouldn't just be, for me, looking at one dog's run and saying, oh, look, this is run really well here. It would be comparing dogs to dogs. So dog A and dog B against dog C, which is like a common denominator that would run against both dogs. And if one of the two dogs had gone to the bend a length in front of dog C, if dog A had gone to the bend a length in front of dog C, and dog B had gone to the bend 3 lengths in front of dog C, I know that dog B is 2 lengths better to the corner than dog A. It's not really as simple as that. It could be a lot more sort of in-depth as that, because you say, oh, this dog hasn't trapped well here, but it was pretty obvious to me. Everything would stand out. Every good bet would just jump out at me. It wouldn't be hard work. Although there'd be a lot of researching, a lot of looking, it would be pretty obvious.
You showed me your system earlier, and there's probably half a dozen meetings on today.
Yeah.
So would you concentrate on just one meeting?
Yep. I've slowed down a lot to what I'm talking about when I was first doing this. And my appetite for the game wouldn't be as great as it was back then. I will do some studying this afternoon, which is a Monday afternoon, for tomorrow's meeting at Sunderland. For the Wednesday meeting, all of the times of the meeting has a bearing, so I will start looking this afternoon for tomorrow's meeting, which starts at 2:08, goes through to just after 6 o'clock. On Wednesday, it's a nighttime meeting on RPGTV. So that would be televised on a television channel on so that I can watch it on telly or on my computer. Thursday is a morning meeting, so I'll probably get up very, very early in the morning to do the Thursday's meetings. Depending whether I've got any accounts that I can use to get on. Like, I'm sure that a lot of the people that you've interviewed have said that, oh, we've got people who have got accounts that we use and things like that. It's not always like that. Most of my business would now be on Betfair, but yeah, we do come across getting on in the shops is completely a waste of time. If I'd have to drive for at least an hour to get to a shop where I'm not known to get a bet on, which I should imagine every professional gambler would be saying the same thing as that.
Right, Jerry, going back to when you first started, you know, making an impact on course, those bookies must have started running a bit scared when you were back in 10 minutes.
Yeah. I was always extremely dangerous. A bookmaker doesn't actually, even if you're clued up, or what I'd call a professional or clued up, you if you're making it pay, if you're back in a 2-to-1 shot with a bookmaker, it's not the end of the world for him, even if you're clued up, because he can make a book round your bet. If you come in and have a two monkeys with a bookmaker, if he's making, say, give for example, a bookmaker like Dougie Tyler at Walthamstow, if I walked into Dougie Tyler and had a two monkeys, he wouldn't be that perturbed about laying me a two monkeys. But he would be perturbed at laying a 2,200 a dog. Because it's very, very hard for him to field around laying a 2,200 to 2 a dog, where laying the two monkeys, he can say, well, I can get to work with the second favourite here, and he can sort of make a book round your bet. Making a book round a 2,200 to 2, that's by the time that Walthamstow was closing, or but say in the 2000s, between the year 2000 and 2008, it'd be, they wouldn't be taking that sort of money, so it'd be hard to field round a 2,200 to 2, so he wouldn't be too happy laying my sort of bets. I was not one to usually be having the two monkeys. I'd be more likely to have a 10-100 to 1. I could have something to win a grand with Dougie, so that would be the difference between what I was doing and what other punters was doing. They'd be sort of like, it was a bit, little bit shrewd. They would say, oh, this is a good bet tonight, we're going to have our like 400 quid on this at 2-to-1 or 7-to-4. Where I'd be saying, oh, I've got two up my sleeve tonight, I fancy this at 5-to-1, and this dog could be like 7 or 8-to-1 tonight. So my reward would be a lot bigger than their reward would be if they got it right or if I got it right.
What was your relationship like with the racecourse bookies? Because they must have not liked you.
No. I mean, they wouldn't. It was so strange. I wasn't actually allowed to bet with probably 50% of the bookmakers at Walthamstow. But I would have people who would put my bets on, and because they'd been losing punters over the years, they still took their bets, even though they knew it was ridiculous that they knew it was my bets, but they'd still take their bets. Bookmakers like Ronnie Bazell was a no-go area, Morell was a no-go area, Lambert was a no-go area. So I'd be down to getting on with Dougie Tyler, Joe O'Gorman. He'd lay me a fair bet, Joe. Like, he'd lay me a dog to lose a grand, which that's all the others was actually laying me. So Joe would lay as big a bet as anyone else, so I can't really say anything bad about Joe. Joe would be the only clued up bookmaker at the track. Like, he'd be the only one that could go to war with me and have a knowledge of some idea of what I was going to do. But not being disrespectful, the poacher's always going to have to be like a step or two in front of the gamekeeper. So Joe was more the gamekeeper, the bookmaker, and I was the poacher, the gambler.
Ben from Star Sports wrote a blog a while back saying it used to intimidate him when he was
Right, well, I'll tell you the story from the beginning with Ben. I used to go to Sittingbourne on a Sunday when there used to be opens there. And Ben was standing up at Sittingbourne and laid a very big bet. He had someone working for him called, his nickname was Johnny Shits. Am I allowed to say that word on YouTube? His name was Johnny Shits because he used to speak a load of bullshit, honestly. He was probably what someone I'd call a friend. I used to probably see him a couple of three nights a week at Romford and spend Sittingbourne, and we'd known each other for many years. He said to me, "Oh, Jerry," he said, "I've got some good news for you, Jerry." He said, "Ben's getting in Walthamstow." He said he's going to come along. He said, "He'll take any bet that you want." He said, "There's no bet," he said, "that you can have," he said, "that'd be too big for Ben." I said, "Really, Johnny?" So he said, "Jerry," he said, "he will take any bet you want to have." I said, "John," I said, "if he takes any bet that I want," I said, "he'll be skimped within 6 months." I said, "and you won't have a job." So he said, "Boy," he said, "you don't understand how big he is, Jerry." I said, "John," I said, "I don't care how big he is." I said, "if he wants to lay me any bet that I want, I guarantee you, he will be skimped within 6 months. It'll be called Jerry Sports, not Star Sports, Johnny." He wouldn't listen to me. Ben come along. We got the sabres out. We pulled our sabres out at the beginning of the first meeting. We started the sword fight. Within 3 or 4 months, Ben had to put his hands up. "I'm sorry, Jerry, you're too clever for me. You can only have to win £1,000. And it became pretty annoying. So we didn't really get off on a good footing because there was a lot of... when a bookmaker says, "Oh, I'll lay you anything you want," and then all of a sudden the goalposts change, a punter's not very happy about it. So it was not a good relationship to start off with, me and Ben. And then I've got to say things got worse and worse. I remember one night we had a massive row at the track, which spilled over onto the Betfair forum, I'm ashamed to say, and it got pretty bad. He got mobile phones barred at the track because Ben's theory was that I was playing on Betfair. If it was bigger on Betfair, I was playing on Betfair. And if it was bigger than with him, I was playing with him. This was not true. I've got to say, Ben, this was not true. What I was doing, if I wanted like a £2,000 bet, I was having £1,000 on Betfair at 7-2. And I was having £1,000 at the track. I was just literally getting on as much as I could, or as much as that bet represented. But if it was bigger on Betfair, yes, I would have been playing purely on Betfair. But if it would have been like sort of 5 dead on Betfair and 7-2 at the track, I would have had £1,000 on Betfair down to 7-2 and £1,000 at the track at 7-2 to get 7,002 in total. So when the mobile phone ban was brought in, there was all signs. It was purely brought in for me, not being big-headed, it was brought in for me. I had no option but to leave Walthamstow. So now there was more antagonism that the track that I loved more than anything, I wasn't allowed to go to because of Mr. Keith. So our relationship just got worse and worse and worse and worse and worse. So Simon, now you're meant to say, how did everything turn around for the 2 years?
Well, I did see you at the Christmas party.
Right, so how it turned around. When I left the track, knowing that I would be able to bet at the time on a channel called the 468 channel, which again was a racing channel that had Walthamstow on, as far as I can remember, every meeting. I think that there might have been a meeting where it wasn't on and I used to sometimes have to go to the track, but usually I wasn't at the track. And this is what made me. Believe it or not, getting not barred from Wolverhampton, I wasn't barred from Wolverhampton, I had to, excuse me, I had to leave Wolverhampton because of the mobile ban. They was literally following me round. If I would have got my phone out, I would have been barred from the track. So I sort of had to leave, but it made me, because when I left, I could bet on Betfair, and at the time there was massive, massive liquidity. So if I wanted sort of like £2,000 on a 10-1 stab, I didn't have that much trouble getting it on. Well, if I wanted sort of maybe £400 or £500 on the track on a 10-1 shot, it was 10-1 into 5-1 or 4-1. With the people who was putting the bets on for me, adding their little bit on as well. So, actually, leaving Wolverhampton was the making of me. When the 468 channel closed down, I had to go back to Wolverhampton with not my tail between my legs, but I had no option but to go back to Wolverhampton and start punting there again. And Ben used to approach me and said, look, why don't we be friends rather than like enemies and like sort of shouting at one another? And to start off with, sorry to say this, I used to say to Ben, no, Ben, there's no possible chance me and you being friends, and I don't want anything to do with you, and you, no. And in the end, I sort of started to grow a little bit fonder of him, and then just used to think, well, he's not really got any arm in him, like he's just a bookmaker and thing. And I slowly started to warm to him. And then a mutual respect turned into a strong friendship for the two of us. We've been friends now for 10 or 11 years. Go on holiday together, go out for meals every month or so, speak on the phone. Not every day or every week. Sometimes he might be busy or doing something or got work commitments and I won't speak to him, but we usually catch up like once every couple of weeks at least, and go out for a meal once a month. So yeah, that's how we've ended up good friends, me and Ben.
Jerry, I'm thinking that even somebody like you must have bad runs, like everybody else seems to. How do you deal with them mentally?
They are harder to cope with as you get older. When I was younger, you might sort of, but that would pretty much be the end of it. I'm not really a bad loser. A lot of punters could be bad losers and say, but no, the losing for me is just an occupational hazard, and it's never ever affected me. I'm not a bad loser in the slightest. Like if I used to come home from the dogs to my partner at the time, it would be, this is very strange, it would be more likely that if I won a big amount, I'd be morose. The reason being, the adrenaline rush when I had won would be very, very manic with me. I'm very sort of hyper person. Like, I don't know if it comes across what the filming you're doing now, Simon, but in normal life I'm an extremely hyper person, so the adrenaline when I won and the being right would be extraordinarily high, manic. So the downside of any mania is sort of like a lethargic sort of, when I come home I'd be lethargic and sort of more down than if I'd lost, I'd just sort of come home and be like there'd be no peaks and troughs, so I'd just come home normal. So it'd be very, very hard to tell whether I'd won or lost. The losing, I've got to be honest, I know a lot of punters are going to say, it's not really affected me badly, the losing, although we all go through losing spells, and I'm going through a pretty tough time at the moment since before Christmas. It's the 29th of January today, I think. So the weather does affect what you're doing. I've got theories why. But mainly it's the going, like you've got frosty tracks and salted tracks where it's been frozen and they've had to salt it when it's frozen, and then when the weather gets wet and the track's salted, it will create bias and things like that. But I have to say, the tracks are prepared awfully nowadays compared to, especially compared to Walthamstow, but as tracks was prepared years ago, even in the depths of winter, there would be no, there would have to be snow that day for a meeting to be abandoned. Meetings are being abandoned all the time now, where the tracks are just not being prepared properly.
When you, people like to hear about bad days and good days, can you remember any particular
I'll tell you a few of the good days first. I started at the end of Walthamstow, when I found out Walthamstow was closing. I think I was out in Dubai or somewhere on an exotic holiday somewhere, and I come home and my friends threw a paper on the table and said, "Have you seen this?" And there's a big picture of Walthamstow Stadium, Walthamstow to close. At the time, it was pretty devastating because Walthamstow was, to me, was like my mistress. I loved the place. It was it had very, very good memories from being a young boy and going there and then getting a living out of the place. I literally loved the place. But when I found out Walthamstow was closing, I didn't hang on to it and dwell to get a living out of the place. I jumped into other things. And the other things that I jumped into was Oxford, Crayford, and Sittingbourne. Now, when I said earlier, being thrown out of Walthamstow was the making of me, or getting the mobile phone ban was the making of me, because then I was betting on Betfair and there was loads of liquidity and my profits jumped up. When Walthamstow closed, exactly the same thing happened, but on a lot larger scale. at the time, I worked in an office, and I was the brains of the operation at the time. I was the main person picking the winners, and although the other people in the office done the same as what I did, I was the brains really. I used to say, look, this is what we're doing, this is where we're going, this is what we've got to do. And my idea was that all of us would take a track up that we did. At the time, we was all doing Walthamstow, but I started doing Crayford. I was already doing Crayford at the time, but I started doing Oxford. And I told the people in the office with me to start doing Sittingbourne. As a brains trust, we was a great group. There was one fella in the office who just didn't get on with me. He didn't like me. He couldn't get on with me in the slightest. To be honest, looking back, I was a little bit of a bully to him, but it was only that he was sort of underachieving in a lot of ways, but looking back on it, I was a bully, to be honest, so I'm sorry to that person, really. But so we all started doing something different. I'd done Oxford. There was still a little bit of Walthamstow, but I'd give up on Walthamstow by this time. I knew that the bookmakers who was left at the track, I knew they would strangle me. I knew that they wouldn't let me get on. I knew they'd be betting the bigger percentages. So although I loved the track, for the last 6 months, I pretty much left it alone and concentrated on other things. And the other things that I concentrated on was Crayford, Oxford, and Sittingbourne. Now, these three tracks, at the time, they was just gold mines. And if you'd have just had one of them, and you was as good a judge as me, you'd be earning loads of money. If you had two of these tracks, you'd be earning loads and loads of money. I had three of them, and I was getting absolute fortunes. The money was just astronomical. I was getting the same as a Premiership footballer at the time. Good weeks, I was winning up to 100 grand in a week. But as an average, from 2008 when Walthamstow was closing, I was getting 30 grand a week for a long time. It was absolute heaven on earth. The amount of work that I had to do, I only had to sit at a keyboard. It was mentally hard work, like that I'd be doing at that stage a couple of meetings a day usually, like I'd be doing all the Sky meetings and I'd do like other things, but my workload at the time was heavy, but I could do it at the time. I was still only sort of 30, 36, 37, I was still fairly young. I had a couple of kids, I was inspired because of my kids. And things was really, really, really good. on the downside of that, I didn't have a lot of brains. Apart from winning this money, I didn't have a lot of brains that I didn't buy any properties. I just sort of had a very attractive girlfriend who I had a couple of kids with, and I was off on holiday every sort of 5 or 6 weeks to Vegas, Dubai, Barbados, wherever I wanted to go, restaurants, fast cars. And to be honest, I got caught up in the moment, like I suppose a lot of people do, really, and I could never see it coming to an end. I used to say to people, as long as these eyes don't go, I'm gonna be able to continue doing this for years. I knew that the bookmakers wouldn't let me continue at the level I was, because I knew that they'd stop me from betting in the shops. Excuse me. I knew that they'd stop me from, I was literally getting thousands of pounds on in the shops. If I fancied something at 8-1, and I said to my putter owners, look, take the liberty here, you've got to get on as much as you can, they was getting £1,000 on something at 8-1. An example, I fancied a dog at Oxford one day. The bookmakers at the track stuck it up at 8-1. I had to do the maths there. Four of my put runners got £1,000 each on it at 8-1. One of them got 1,100 quid. And I had about 1,500 quid on it on Betfair at 13-2. The dog won. I laid the 1,500 quid back on Betfair at 3-1 when I shortened it up. And won about £35,000 on the race. That was just one race at Oxford. I think it was about an A5 or A6. It was common for things like that to happen on a regular basis.
So all the boys were had a pickle that up in Reddies.
All of my mates and put runners was all driving about. With, I think, our car of choice at the time was a 320 Mercedes SL or something like that. We was all driving about in the same cars, and then I went on to a 650 BMW when things got better and better, convertible, and I was driving about like a fat film star at the time, or a fat footballer. Didn't have the bodywork for it.
Well, I'm guessing that in a place even as big as London, your men were soon marked by the betting shop managers. So what happened next?
Right, so what started to happen was that it was actually scandalous what the bookmakers was actually doing to us. It come to the stage you'd get a bet on, which years ago a bet was very, very binding. It was a bookmaker and client's relationship was a bond, like it was sort of like a your word, like it was sort of a handshake when you had a bet. But what the bookmakers was doing, I'll give you an example. I was in a lab books in Forest Gate one night. I got on about £350 forecast. Now I'd have my put runners would have been doing the same bets. They'd have been duplicating the bet that I have had. Some of them would get it for like 20 quid for me. Some of them would get it for 100 quid for me. This day, I think that I got this bet on for £50 each forecast for this race. I put the bet on literally a minute before the off. It's an SP bet. I haven't took, obviously, a forecast. I haven't took any prices on it. as the dogs are coming round the second bend, the dog that I've had to run second was a strong finisher, and this dog was actually in front, so I know that I've done my money. The phone has rung, the manager or the person behind the counter has come running out. He said, I'm afraid to tell you, he said, this bet's void. So I said, anyway, I'll give him the bet back because I know the bet is beat. But it's pretty scandalous if you think about it, that if you told a layman this, they'd say, no, that can't happen. They're not allowed to do that. You've had the bet and the race is off. That's binding. But no, they would literally cancel bets. After you've had the bet, they would say to you when you went in and drew the bet, oh, this bet's been voided and things like that. And you'd say, well, how can it be voided? If this bet would have got beat, I've walked out the shop, I would have thrown my ticket away and found it on the floor. So what you're actually saying is that you're just robbing me, really, that I can't win, that if I put this bet on and it loses, I'm throwing the ticket away, and if it wins, I'll get my money back. So where is the logic in that? And you'd think, well, no, that's true. They can't do that, but they actually are, and they actually was. They was actually taking the piss out of me, really, because it comes to the stage where you could only lose. I'll give you an example of a recent happening of this. I put a bet on literally in a shop, 250 yards down the road from where I live. It was a full cast double and treble bet at Romford. I think it probably last winter. I've got the bet on. Now, it had gone through their checks and everything with Ladbrokes, which has got, it's not like they've got to ring it up. It literally, when they put that bet through into the thing, it's shown up at their head office and it's checked, and it has to be passed for them to take that bet. After about 3 or 4 minutes, they've taken the bet. They've given me the betting slip back. The bet comes to about £195 for full cast doubles and trebles, but £195 on full cast doubles and trebles, which would have probably been a 3x3x3 or a 3x3x4, something like that, it can be astronomical payout. When I say astronomical, like it could theoretically be 100,000, 150,000, 50,000. It's a large amount for a small outlay. Not that it happens very often. I've probably only ever had 2 or 3 up in my life, and not for that sort of money. But I've had full cast doubles up and things like that. The first leg has won, and it's now big money is rolling on. Big money is rolling on to the second and third legs for full cast double and full cast trebles. The meeting has been abandoned. I think it was raining, torrential rain, and the meeting had got abandoned. The bet at this stage was worth, I think it was about £1,200 that the bet come to. So we've had the first full cast, which had been like 3 selections of full cast, like 2-1, 3-1, 4-1. For example, 2-1's come up. The remaining events had all been abandoned, so the rest of the bet is void. So I've got the first full cast in doubles and trebles with a non-runner and non-runner. So I've got one double and one treble, but I've only got one full cast that's actually won. The bet had come to something like £1,250, which would have been the money that I'd rolling in. Gone to the betting shop. Put the ticket over the counter. The fella said, I'm glad you come in. He said, this bet's void. So I said, what do you mean it's void? He said, yeah. He said, no. He said, we shouldn't have took this bet. I said, mate, I said, I've stood here for 5 minutes. I said, you see me stand here. I said, well, the bet was verified. I said, it's been verified, that bet. I said, so how can you void it? I said, if it would have got beat, I said, I'd have thrown it away. So he said, no, he said, mate, he said, they've rung up, he said, and it's voided. I said, mate, don't be stupid, please. After 10 minutes to customer services, they said, we're going to honour this bet, like if they was doing me some sort of favour. And they paid me out the money that I had to come, £1,200. But it's actually come to the stage where I would say it's virtually impossible for me to have 2 bets in the shop if I'm known. If I have one bet, the cameras will be on in that shop. They will see my face. They will know who I am. And there's no second bet, whether the first bet has won or lost. And that applies to... Am I allowed to say the firms that it applies to? Or not really, Simon? That applies to Paddy Powers, William Mills, Ladbrokes, Coles, Jennings, all of these shops are no-go areas for me. As soon, don't think that I'm saying that I can't walk into a betting shop and be lucky that there's just a cashier behind there rather than a manager and take a liberty and get a £200-300 bet on. It can happen and it does happen, but to say that I can walk into a betting shop and bet, it'd be an absolute no-go area for me getting a bet on in the shop.
So how do you get on these days?
I've got people, I've still, years ago when I'm talking about when Walthamstow was still open and then moving on to Sittingbourne, Crayford and Oxford, I had probably a hardcore reporter runners for me that was probably five full-time putter runners. Not that any of them got paid, my information was their payment. So it's not like I paid them to put my bets on. They knew that if they listened to what I was doing, that they was going to win plenty of money at the end of the year. I'm not saying all of the people would have doubled my bets, but they would have, if I was having a... when you was able to get it come to the stage where you could get like a couple of £100 on, they'd probably have got £100 on the single where I was having £200, and if I was having a 40 quid full cast, they might have been getting a 20 quid full cast. If I was getting a £30 tri cast, they would have probably got it for £10 or £15. So it become harder and harder and harder to get on. And not being Big Eddie, there was other people who was good as well. Paul Richardson, Alan Richardson at Romford and Crayford was great judges. Jack, fella called Jack at Hove, very, very shrewd cookie. By all accounts, although I've only actually seen him, I can't say that I know Jack. But a great judge. People up north, like they've got good judges up north. There's people who do what I do everywhere. People say, well, what's the difference? Was you better than them? Who was the best? And it's a very hard question because we'd all be good at different things slightly. Like my mate Paul Richardson was good at full cast and tri cast. He was on a different level to me doing that. Although he taught me and I listened to him so I learned a lot from like Paul at Crayford, like with like full cars and tri cars and things like that, and he was a lot in front of me in brain terms for doing things like that. When Walthamstow was open, it would have been very, very, very lucrative for me to be able to do something like that. I rarely did. Like I backed winners, but I wouldn't have had like sort of the brain to say, oh my god, this is a really good second dog here, and this is a good frame up dog. I didn't really have that brain. Really, it was pretty sinful. Really, that I didn't take advantage of it. Really, so.
Sort of, you've obviously got the greyhounds by the Short and Curly. Do you ever get involved in any other sort of sporting events for professional punting?
That is a complete and definite no from me, Simon. I am completely one-dimensional. I'm terrible. I don't ever bet on a football. I will have a bet on anything that I see. I'll give you an example. When Joe McCreldry won X Factor, I had him to win £50,000. Which is a large amount to win. Again, I didn't have no expertise, but I was watching it, and every week he was a good single, he was likeable, he was good looking, and he was 14-1. Every week I was, well, not so much every week, every day, like he was 14-1 for 100 quid on Betfair. I was scooping it all up, and I backed him and backed him and backed him and backed him and backed him. I think I went on a holiday for 3 weeks to Vegas over Christmas and New Year on the winnings when he won it. I mean, obviously, he shortened up in the end. He was like odds on for the last 2 or 3 weeks. But when he was a big price, I was scooping up all the money. I will bet on anything that I see. I just don't see that much anymore. Well, I don't go in betting shops no more. I won't say, oh my God, that horse run well there, or I don't see it now. So I'm very, very blinkered what I do. I gamble on ground racing and that's it. I haven't got an opinion on anything else.
How do you get your money on then now?
I've got people putting on for me. Very, very different now. I'm where once upon a time my people who put on for me would be very localised. They'd be one of being, for example, Hackney, one of being Leytonstone, one of being Romford, and one might be as far as Bermondsey. But now the people who are putting on for me are that part of the country, that part of the country, a different country, and a different country. It's all over the place now. Again, I should imagine a lot of professional punters, if you think, would say pretty similar. Yeah, we've got people here, there, and everywhere who are putting on for us now. But once upon a time, I would be able to get on in, well, I'm in central London or on the outskirts of London, and central London being very close. There's literally a shop every 150 yards. It's not like I say, oh, there's a scarcity of things, but it's very much changed. I can't get there's one good thing. You still have a massive turnover of cashiers and managers in shops. So you literally, as you say, oh, I'm barred from that shop, I can't get a bet on in there. 6 months later, you'll have a completely new crop of staff in there. So you start all over again, sort of thing. But it's extremely hard to get on now. All the people who are punting now would say exactly the same. Whether they're betting on horses, whether they're betting on dogs, they'll all say that it's a struggle to get on. Whether things turn around with, excuse me, I'm keeping coughing, Simon. Whether this will all change now that these roulette terminals are coming down to £2. That actually does come in from £100. These shops are going to be forced to do something different to what they're doing now, because the profits on these machines is astronomical. Although, like they say, always a single zero, the edge the edge for the house is like 2.7% or 2.8%. It's much more than that. Like that's per spin. But when it's spin after spin after spin after spin, the edge for the house is extremely big. Like they're an absolute golden cow. Like they're laying golden eggs every day, these machines. When that comes down to £2, you will see a difference. Whether that difference is that they're forced to lay, or whether they close loads of shops down, I do not know. But it will change.
There's some 18-year-old been took to the dogs by his dad. He loves it. He's found he can back a few winners. He wants to be like you. Is there still the opportunity there?
Less and less, really, Simon. The horse racing is still not so much a big pond as a sea. Where once upon a time you could say horse racing was an ocean and dog racing was a sea, now the horse racing is a sea and the dog racing is coming to a pond, and that pond is drying up and getting smaller and smaller. Tracks will close. As the land that these dog tracks are on, for example, Hove, how much longer can Hove actually stay open for? The land that it's built on is worth a king's ransom. It's going to go one day, whether it's in a year's time or 10 years' time, Hove will go, one of the major tracks. In the end, you will come down to tracks purely being owned by bookmakers, and they will be to feed the betting shops with dog racing. At the moment, Simon, there used to be, once upon a time, there used to be two afternoon meetings on the dogs. That was it. Talking about going back 10 or 15 years ago. There'd be two afternoon meetings. Then there was two morning meetings, two afternoon meetings. Then there was two morning meetings, two afternoon meetings, two evening meetings. Now there's four morning meetings, there's four afternoon meetings. There's a matinee meeting, there's a so-and-so meeting, there's an early evening meeting. there's too much dog racing. There's not that many dogs out there to supply these tracks anymore, Simon. Some dogs, I was talking to a friend of mine through text the other day, and he said one dog has run, I think, six times in January or seven times in January. That's coming up to two runs a week. Like, it's completely ridiculous. It was unheard of years ago, like something like that happening, Simon. There'd be, if a dog was getting a run once a week, it was having a lot of races. But now, there's just a shortage of dogs. There's a demand. It's going to come to the stage, in my opinion, where certain tracks are going to be having fours and five dog races. They will be full up for the... They will try to be full up for the bags meetings, but it will come to the stage if they have like a Saturday night meeting, like the meeting where they can get someone into people into the track to sell them beer and a bit of food. It will come to the stage where a lot of them races will be five dog races. There's just too much racing. It's overkill at the moment.
Do you get like last year's Star Sports? Spots of the Grand Derby, you get back horses to win a fortune there. Do you get involved with trying to sort out the winners of those big events?
Do you know what, Simon? I've got to put my hands up. I've never, ever, ever made a profit out of betting on the Derby. It's even when I was very, very successful, extremely successful, I can't ever remember backing a winner on the Derby. I really can't. It's very, very hard. Strangely, to win on the Derby, it's very difficult. Like this year's Derby, I have to say, I'm not just saying this because Star Sports sponsored it. It was without doubt the best Derby that I've ever been to, and I haven't been to every Derby. People say, "Oh, I went to the Derby." I haven't been to every Derby, but it was fantastic this year. Towcester was absolutely fantastic. It was. To say phenomenal, it wouldn't be bigging it up too much to say it was fantastic. The whole thing about it was well run, great racing, great atmosphere. It was the best that I've ever been to. So hopefully Ben continues to sponsor it and it carries on and gets bigger and bigger and bigger. And another thing, everyone in the dog game is behind Towcester 100%. Whether you like the track, a lot of people are knockers of the running track and things like that, but behind Towcester 101%.
Right, Jerry, we don't want to end up on a miserable, despondent note, but a lot of people are concerned about the future of greyhound racing. How do you see it?
Yeah, well, we go back a little bit. When I was a kid, I'm 51. When I was a kid, there was tracks everywhere in London. Like people like know and have heard of Hackney Wick and Haringey, but I'm talking about like tracks like Clapton and West Ham and Park Royal. And although I was only a kid, and I can't say, oh, I used to go there. It was actually before my time. But these tracks was here in my lifetime, and I used to go with my dad as a kid. They closed down one after the other, after the other, after the other. There is not a track in London now. People say, oh, well, Romford's not in London. Romford's in Essex, so it's not in London. We haven't got anywhere in London now. I don't know how many tracks there was off the top of my head, but there was 20, 30, maybe 40 even in London 50 years ago. They're all gone. So it shows you in what direction the sport is going. We have got one last hope. One last hope of dog racing is actually Towcester. They go ahead. The owner of the track really, really, really is having a go. They've got the best, in my opinion, the best racing manager in Chris Page, who knows the game inside out. We have really got to get behind Towcester and what they're doing for the sport, and in my opinion, greyhound racing is not getting behind it in the way that it should. There's a lot of people, oh, but I don't like the track, it's such a horrible running. That's what we've got. I'm talking about as the track. It's a long way away from where the track is, but the viewing's not that good. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about Towcester is having a go. They've got the best trainers, they've got the best dogs, they've got great facilities, the restaurants are fabulous, the bars are fabulous. I've got to say, I don't own no shares in the company. I'm not bigging them up from that point of view, but it really, really is fantastic. The few times that I've been there, everything has been top-notch to the point that I would say that how it is run, the restaurants and the facilities are on a par with Walthamstow. Right, so this is what I do for my living. This is a race tomorrow at Nottingham that I'm doing. This is the second race. So on my system, right, I've got any races up there, I don't want that. Right, so the videos are for the last 3 months. If I click this button here, this is all dogs that have run together. So in this race here, three of these dogs have run together on the 22nd of January, which tells me the date just here. And the dogs that have run are Salakers Olympic, Belly for Rocky, and Come Out Honey Pie. And I will see how these three dogs run together. So you can tell from this, but who's got the best early, what direction they're going. So Sixie's got an extremely slow away here, and it's gone to the bend by far the fastest out of 2, 3 and 6. I'll just run it back again to see how much it heading into the corner. But if we freeze it as they come out, you can see that 6 is quite a way behind 2 and 3 out the boxes, maybe up to 2 lengths behind. So, and you can see that when it gets going into the corner, it's got quite a lot in end of 3 particularly, and 2 by not quite as much. Now 2 and 3 have got crowded a little bit down the back straight. But you can see that 6 is very, very much 2 and 3's governor. Not come home too bad, 6 as well, so it's done quite a bit of everything, Come Out Honey Pie. Right, now I've watched 3 of those dogs run together. Poor old Come On Honey Pie's got knocked over after the line. Now I'll be looking for something else to run against Come Home Honey Pie, and I've found that nothing else has run apart from them two dogs. So now what I would do, I would compare, say, 5 and 6 together. Now what I can do then, I can click on this button down here, and this will be a dog that has run against both dogs. And a dog called Tuffy Shark has come up. The runs are very, very close together, the 22nd of January and the 19th of January. I will click on this run. Now I know that Come On Honey Pie, that is the race that I've just watched, but I'll know that Come On Honey Pie has got loads of early. I will see it against 5 here. Now 5's trapped a couple of lengths in front of 6. 6 is definitely better than 5 to the corner. It's virtually levelled it at the corner. 5's run a better bend. Again, 6 is a par for 5 down the back straight, if not a little bit better. Had to check at the third bend behind 5. 5 has got another length and a half, 2 lengths on him. 6 is run a little bit wide. You can't say that 6 is not even better than 5 coming home. So now we will see how the 6 dog got on against Tuffy Shark. You know the Tuffy Shark and Come On Honey Pie are very, very level to the corner when they run together. A few days before, these two run together. Right, you can see that Tuffy Shark is by far better than this Vigorous Rory. So now I know that Come On Honey Pie is better than Vigorous Rory to the corner, better than Salakers Olympic to the corner, and better than Belly for Rocky to the corner. So now I say, what's these two dogs like? Up with Mario. Wow, Right, we'll do another comparison. We've got Taffy Shark come up again. So now this is the 22nd when it beat come out Honey Pie. We'll see how this gets on. We'll see how this gets on. Now, Upward Mario is in trap 3 and Taffy Shark is in 5. Here's coming round. Right, now you can say that that's better than Taffy Shark to the corner. Now, this might not stay, this dog. This might, it's got a little bit crowded, so. Let's try to go again. It hasn't had the best of runs there. But now we know, out of all these other dogs, that Upward Mario has got more early than Taffy Shark, where Come On Honey Pie only had as much early. But we've got to say, he's got crowded about a little bit. So we say, well, we'll have another look at another dog. And we've got one more comparison to do here, and that's Mad About Roger. Right, so that's that same race. We know that that they're pretty equal to the corner. Now, if two's better than one here, we can say, well, and they're pretty much a par. Two's probably a length better than one, maybe 3/4 of a length. It stayed okay at two, so you know that it stays okay. So we'll just have a look how Taffy Shark got on with Mad About Roger or Ryoga. 6-1. We know that 6 is absolutely murdered one into the corner now. So this is exactly what I do for my job. It's not brain surgery, it's just measuring one dog against one dog. And one dog, you must never presume. I always believe what is on my system here. I don't say, oh, I think I fancy one here, this run really well. I purely believe what I see on my system. And I know that I've got quite a lot more work to do. Don't think it's just like sort of 5 minutes work. I'll have to dig a lot deeper and do a lot more research. But it's coming to the stage where Come Out Honey Pie is a bet tomorrow in that race. It would be something that I'd be contemplating betting. And that is purely what I do for my job. It's just like being a forensic detective, really. Once everything's been eliminated and you've done all the research, what you're left with is the result. The future of the game. I can just see tracks closing and closing and closing. And if Towcester happens to close, then I think it's then going to become a sport where you say Coles, Ladbrokes, William Hill, they own two tracks there, and maybe in 30 or 40 years' time, they'll be the only tracks that are going, apart from little independents that have got flapping tracks for whippets and unregulated grounds running around. The pond will get smaller and smaller, in my opinion, if the sport don't get behind Towcester. So it's a bleak future for ground racing, in my opinion.
Star Sports are the proud sponsors of the English Greyhound Derby, all part of our commitment to the sport from the home of Greyhound Racing Betting. BeGambleAware.org. Over 18 only.